Thursday's last guest is this man. He terrifies me, but I love him. And on Tuesday, yes, you do. I'll tell you why in a second. On Tuesday, he was an answer in the answer smash round on Richard Osman's House of Games. I have a very tragic life where I play House of Games on my own every night. And because I regard him as the coolest comedian, I got it in a heartbeat. I actually went, yes, to myself. It's tragic.
What was the question?
Let me say your name first, Stuart, because people think, who's this bloke talking to? Look, everybody, it's Stuart Lee. The question, the question was, you know, have you seen Osman's House of Games? Do you know it?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay. It's Answer Smash is where they have a picture of someone, something, and then a spoken word question, and you've got to answer, put the two together. And so yours was, which actor played Dracula in Countess Films and was also in, I think it was Harry Potter.
Yeah.
With your picture. So you were Christopher Lee and Herring.
Oh, right. Yeah, actually, I was on a pub trivia machine once where the double act I was in came up as a question. I think it's sort of the dummy one, you know, where they don't really expect people to know anything about it. But, yeah, that's very exciting. I've been a quiz question as well in The Guardian, so I'm very pleased.
Have you?
A crossword question, yeah.
I think that's amazing. I told Dawn French once that she's a bollard on Plymouth Hoe, where she comes from. And Plymouth, they don't have much money in Plymouth. Well, most councils don't anymore. So they've done a tribute in metal bollards as parking spaces. So everyone famous who's come from Plymouth gets their own bollard. So there's a Joshua Reynolds, there's a Sharon Davis, and Dawn French has got a bollard.
That's really practical. Where I live, in Hackney in northeast London, there's a cemetery which is just by my house, and it's full of the graves of 19th century comedians, pretty much all of whom are forgotten, and I like to go there to remind me about how we are forgotten. Champagne Charlie is in there, who you'll probably remember. You know that song, Champagne Charlie's my name. But there's another guy, Herbert Campbell, who was kind of the Peter Kay of 1895, and he's got a massive marble obelisk with the word comedian written on it.
Wow.
And no one has remembered him at all. But if it was a bollard, it would at least have a practical application. So I think that's quite good.
We've got a circus man here in the old Billing Road Cemetery, and his is a rider on a horse, a bareback horse, and it's huge, you know. And, of course, the cemetery is overgrown and isn't used as a cemetery anymore, but you've got this fantastically ornate thing in the middle of it that says, don't you ignore me, I was someone in my day in the middle of this overgrown wilderness. It's kind of I like it.
What would you have? What if you could have any stone memorial in an abandoned graveyard? What would you feel would sum up your career?
Well, obviously the monument would be pointing under the soil for a start. That would sum everything up, I think. It would go under. I think it would be a set of headphones. That would take your breath away, wouldn't it? A set of giant concrete marble, obviously.
Yeah.
Marble headphones.
Yeah, be good. Big headphones, yeah, do that.
And then in small print under my name, it would be, he never did amount to much. And that would sum it up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think that would be undermining yourself, having gone to all
I spent all my money, all my family's inheritance on marble, and then I'm saying amounted to nothing. No, you're right. You're right. Have you got a plot? Have you picked yourself a plot out in the cemetery?
No, what I want to happen to me is I want to be cremated and then for my ashes to be taken to an island that you can only reach by a small boat off the northeast coast of Orkney.
Wow.
Called Papa Westray, and I want to be then thrown into a Neolithic burial chamber and left there. I also like the fact that it would be massively inconvenient for whoever has to do that. They'll have to get a light aircraft to the island, then a small boat, then find somewhere to stay overnight. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Have you told your kids yet? Have you explained what's going to happen?
They're very much looking forward to the holiday already. Rather too much, I think.
Basically, is week tomorrow at the Dangate. People are saying this is your best show ever. You're calling it your worst ever show. That can't be right.
Well, I don't think it's the best. I'm hanging in there at 55 after 36 years of stand-up. I mean, yeah, it's more fun than they normally are. If anyone's seen me before, this is like me trying to do comedy properly. But then there's a subtext to it, which you get about a week later. You go, oh, it was that. That's like when you read a good book and you figure it out a week later. But yeah, it's been really good fun. The audience has been great. It's gone on. I've been doing this one about 18 months, so I'll just bring it down just before the election, and then I'll start writing the next one, which will be it's worked out quite well, actually, because these days you always worry that is the show going to hold together against a shifting national mood, but it will be a clean slate for the next one.
Yes. I mean, have you factored in that there might be a possibility that Rishi could remain the Prime Minister for another 5 years, or have you just dismissed that? Is that gone from your mind?
Even if he does, we know where we are,
yes,
don't we?
You know, yes, we do.
At the moment, they're kind of feeling like, obviously, the Conservatives don't feel it's worth trying to fix anything because they think they might be on the way out. And also, none of us feel it's worth coming up with a new act yet because you don't really know what's happening. So it's all a bit in limbo, you know.
This show and the others, actually, it looks to me whenever I see you, and I saw you on my birthday.
A
year ago. You kind of, it looks like you meander on stage and then you just amble into the routine. But critics call it crafted. Do you craft it? Do you write it down? Someone like Bishop, John Bishop, doesn't write it down. So do you?
Oh, I bet he does. Okay, what John Bishop's brilliant at is making you feel like he's just talking to you. I saw him at the Royal Albert Hall, you know, and it's a really god-awful venue for stand-up. It's echoey and not very intimate. And he sat on a stool in the middle of the stage there, and you felt like he was just in the kitchen. You know, brilliant. But actually, you have to put a lot of work into making things feel casual, you know. So, yeah, it is all worked out. But what I do is every show's normally got about a third of it where there's room to improvise, as long as I can get back to the through line of the story. And because this one's been on the road a bit, what I try and do before I go on stage is work out how I can get all the jokes to work and the story to work, but change as many nouns and adjectives and bits of phrase as possible. And then if stuff comes up in the room, I'll go with it because it kind of keeps it alive. But basically, that's the weird thing about stand-up is the better you are at it, the less it looks like you've made any effort.
Yeah.
And then people are more disparaging of it. I saw there was an article in one of the broadsheets about how the Royal Court is having stand-up on the Royal Court Theatre, a posh theatre in London. And lots of the patrons complaining that, it wasn't a proper art form. And then one person complained. They'd been to see a stand-up one week, and the next week they went back, and it was the same. And that they thought we did a different thing every night. It's a bit like expecting Macbeth to be different every time you go. Because this is a show with a story. So I try and keep it alive, because stand-up's supposed to be like a discursive, chatty art form. But, it is structured. Look, we just lost someone who was absolutely brilliant at this. And he wasn't a comedian, but Steve Wright.
Exactly right.
Who made the listener feel like he was talking to them and like he was all top of his head. Now, I don't want to spoil it for you, but I did Steve Wright. And I look forward to talking to him like I do to you. But it would be pre-recorded and edited, and he would have researchers working on it with him. But he did read the stuff, and he did see the shows. And he was just brilliant at making people feel like they were in the moment. And that's what you've got to do with stand-up. You've got to make it feel like it's really happening. And the better people get at that, the kind of less impressed people are by what they're watching.
What I found so strange with Steve Wright, and he was the last broadcaster to be an influence for me. There's no one now broadcasting that influences me, that I long to listen to. There's not one.
Yeah.
But with him, with all these tributes that his fellow broadcasters have made, they all said with some incredulity, oh, he would turn up at 9 and he'd do a show, then he'd stay until 5:30, and he really, really worked. And you think, well, that's what you should do. All these broadcasters who just rock up, they call it rip and read, who just turn up 5 minutes before a show and then leave 5 minutes after. Well, you can tell.
Well, it was incredibly. I mean, you've seen the last show, which is huge relief, and also Steve Wright would watch a video or read a book or something, you know, and that should be the norm, shouldn't it? People should do it. But it was really great. You always felt like you're in safe hands, and I was really very flattered that he would have me on, because I always felt it was a bit of a risk for his audience, but he tried his best to sell me to them.
Are you still wearing drapes on this tour?
I've got a new look. Got a black one now.
Black? Because I like the blue one. It was turquoise, if I may say that word. Turquoise.
I was trying to make that show feel, that part of that show feel like Entertainment or Freddie Starr or something. But there's a woman in Holmaken, and she's really good, and I've got three of her drapes. But I don't know what the next tour, I'm doing it as a werewolf, so I'm having a werewolf costume made.
Wow, that would be unusual. I mean, have you thought of a werewolf onesie? Would that be appropriate?
Yeah, it's a werewolf onesie. This artist making it. I'm going to try and do stand-up from the point of view of a werewolf. Because it seems to me there's a lot of old guys getting really furious about stuff at the moment on Netflix. And I thought, well, a werewolf would be really angry, wouldn't it, about a lot of things. So that's new angle, a new werewolf act. And I'm not going to be a werewolf in Northampton on Friday.
No, you'll be in a beautiful drape. Do you know the history of the Edwardian Teds? Do you know? Because I know you love music, and you're of the age when the drapes were kind of claimed by punks. And they'd wear them. But you know all the Edwardian history to it, do you?
Oh, I'd love to know it.
I'll leave you a book. There's a fella called Max Deschanay. Do you know Max? He's a rockabilly guy.
Yeah, he's in a band, The Flaming Stars.
There you go. And he's written a book on Teds, just on Teds, because it's peculiarly British. You think because rock and roll is an American thing, they would have that in America. But of course they don't.
No. We've got our own hybrids.
Yeah. So when you do your werewolf show, will you be doing it in arenas? Because I see you, and the Derngate's going to sell out. They've got like 3 rows left at the Derngate, and they'll all have gone by the weekend. And I think you could play these arenas. You're doing 1,500 seaters. If you'd done arenas, you could be living in a mansion by the sea like Billy Bragg now, Stuart, couldn't you?
The thing is, right, I do about 250,000 people on tour, right, but I do it in smaller amounts, right, and there's lots of reasons for that. First of all, you can charge less, right? You can charge half in a theatre what you can in an arena, you know, because there's much less overheads. And I think stand-up's supposed to be an accessible art form, and I like the idea that, you know, people get to... Also, somewhere like the Derngate, most of those big arenas, they have backdoor arrangements with ticket touts. It's a, you know, you can't... They won't admit it, but they do. And so that's why things end up 100, 200, 300 quid tickets for, you know, big comics.
Yeah.
And I like to avoid that. The other thing is that a lot of stand-up is about everyone agreeing on something and all responding at the same time. What a rock band would call the lighter in the air moment, when everyone punches the air and is... Whereas I like to create a degree of confusion. And I like audiences where different responses are happening at the same time and people don't quite know where it's going. And I don't know if it really suits the arena, because the arena's about a collective experience at the same moment. You know what I mean? Whereas in a theatre, I can sort of talk to different people and whatever. Then there's a terrible practical consideration, unfortunately, which is that I'm a bit deaf and I wear hearing aids. And once I get into those concrete and big spaces, the sort of slapback of the sound, the audience sound like a wave breaking on a shore in the far distance. I can't hear what the audience is saying, and I get sort of bombarded by sound. So I'm kind of capped at those size of rooms, which I think makes the act better, because once you get in the arenas, you have to do a kind of monologue, really, because you can't really interact in real time with the crowd. Yeah, you see it happen to bands, you know, a perfectly great group that might do a bit of improvisation or light and shade. Once they get to the arenas, they have to kind of do really solid things that work in those spaces. It just means I spend more time on the road than I necessarily would want to. But, you know, it's nice to meet the demand. I can't believe people keep coming back. I love coming to Northampton.
Well, we can't wait to see you. I've already found you, as you were speaking then, a werewolf costume. I've found smiffies.com for $3.99, but I'm thinking we can maybe do better than that, do you think?
I'm getting a pro to make it in Norfolk. They're really good on werewolves there.
I love that you've done your research. Friday week, tomorrow week, March 1st. What a nice way to kickstart the weekend for Basically with Stuart. Last tickets to be grabbed on 01604 624 811. Thanks.